In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
Okay, there. We started.
Good. Hey, did you watch? Oh, no. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I have nothing I was going to say.
Well, you always say hello and welcome to Magical Talking Hat.
Oh, yeah. Hello, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast that is actually all in the mind of a 14-year-old autistic boy.
Well, that boy's got more problems than just being autistic.
Yes, but you should see
if
what
that
he
would
wears
be considered a problem.
Head.
You know, there's sort of a. see what
Don't
he
make
wears.
Us controversial.
See what he wears on his head. Many people who have. Or who are acquainted with autistic people, you know, really would rather it not be considered a problem or a disability or anything like that. And that makes sense because a lot of autistic people are, you know, some of them are quite gifted. Or they have a very unique way of looking at the world that, yes, I am speaking into the microphone. They have a unique way of looking at the world that is valuable for people to know, so... It's the same with deaf people. If you've ever been acquainted with a deaf person, you'll know that a lot of deaf people don't really consider the fact that they can't hear as any kind of handicap. It's just a characteristic of their, you know, of who they are and of their culture.
And knowing is half the battle. So remember, kids, don't consider... Try and get autism yourself, because apparently it's awesome.
No, it's just...
Also, make yourself deaf, and don't kill bugs. My topic today in church... Why do I keep going back to L. Ron McKenzie?
I don't know.
I love L. Ron McKenzie.
I don't know.
I gotta get that album again.
But this
anyway,
is...
Welcome. I'm Tony, by the way.
And I'm William, and yes. This is episode 56.
Good job. I think. I don't know. Is it? Don't question mark.
No, I think it is.
I think it is too, because we had our highest double episode last time. 55.
And,
Medionis. Speaking of
And
which,
we had a little bit of a debate last time.
But, wait. I got it for... Oh. During the week, this is my latest fun, statistic of our website. We had somebody view our website because they did a Google search for... Der Wiener Schnitzel at Angel Stadium.
How did that get to us?
I don't entirely know, except for the fact that there was also a click to the episode called The Devil's Hot Dog.
Oh. Oh, man.
And so that's awesome.
We really disappoint a lot of people.
We had like people looking for sex hats.
Yeah. We had a disagreement last time, and we asked the listeners to weigh in on it. And
I'm sad to say that I was wrong and you were right. But more importantly, I was right and you were wrong.
Yeah, I was wrong.
But you are also right.
Well.
You were wrong in that people like hearing the stupid, boring crap you spout.
No.
But I was wrong. Well, I wasn't wrong. I was pretty sure they were going to actually say this. But you were right. In that people do seem to think that maybe more hat time would be better.
Or that the people who don't... That there are people who don't mind when there's not a lot of hat time, and then there are people who do, so they'd both be happy if there was
exactly,
a little more hat time.
Exactly. There was not as much consensus on that, but there was consensus that people like your story.
No, see...
I lost a lot of faith in our listeners this time, but...
I do appreciate the kind words that people submitted. That was very nice. But I wasn't really trying. It wasn't really about me sort of, you know, putting myself down or self-effacing or anything like that. It was about I literally and truly and sincerely thought that, well, this is a magical talking hat. So this is what people want to hear. They don't want to hear me going on about anything. And yes,
and
yes,
you're wrong.
I often say that what I'm saying is boring.
Because it is incredibly boring.
Well, because first of all, I don't like listening to it. You obviously don't like listening to it. And I've had a lot of experience with people who don't like listening.
Based on the looks from the hat, it doesn't like
listening
to it.
So I wasn't just being self-critical or something. I mean, I really put all of this data together and facts from feedback from people in my life, including you. And I thought, you know what? This is probably what people want. And yes, you're right. I was part right. But I was also mostly wrong
about that.
I was mostly wrong.
People want
to
hear the William.
Here's what I think. This is how we should approach this. I think
I should stay silent and you should talk.
No.
The whole hour.
No. What?
And I should then talk about video games just for Beth.
We should still get to the hat within a half hour, maybe even earlier. However,
well, I hope so.
I shouldn't freak out so much if we just, you know, say pull one question and we talk about it for 40 minutes.
I'm in favor of that.
Because that's the thing. See, I've always been thinking, not only should we be pulling from the hat earlier, but we should be pulling a lot of things from the hat.
And that's the thing, too. People appear to appreciate quality hat conversation.
Yes.
Rather than quantity.
That's right.
Hat conversation.
That is what I got from it as well.
Okay. So, what did you do this week, William?
I started reading Beyond Good and Evil by Friedrich Nietzsche. And it's pretty interesting.
You
know,
so much.
I've been really enjoying it because, I've read some Nietzsche. I've never read anything like complete. Like I haven't read Zarathustra or Beyond Good and Evil. I haven't read anything complete, just pieces. And I started to realize that most of the little excerpts that I've read are usually in the context of someone else saying what they think.
Agenda.
Yeah.
And they pick and choose.
Sure.
Yeah,
and of course, always in that context, you have to say, well, this is what this guy says, Nietzsche says. And Nietzsche is notoriously called confusing, and, you know, people don't really understand what he's getting at. And so, usually when someone presents someone's views out of context and they say, well, this is what this person's saying, of course, you always take that with a grain of salt, but particularly with Friedrich Nietzsche. So I decided, I'm going to go ahead and read Beyond Good and Evil. Just read something and see if I can understand the entire context of it. And I have to confess that when I was in college and other times in my life when I've tried to read Nietzsche, I've found it kind of baffling. But I find this really fascinating, and I think I understand it. And it's really interesting.
I have not ever read the book. I have played the video game.
Yeah, we played the video
about
game.
About halfway through.
We played the video game, too. The only
How does it come out when in the novelization, essentially?
The only thing I don't like about Nietzsche is that he's very sexist. I mean, to a point of being just a real, like, almost to the point of you just don't even want to read any more of it. But he does have some very interesting ideas. And so I've been really enjoying that. But I'm not going to say anything else about it, just that. So why don't you go ahead and tell a more interesting story about,
what
you've
still
done this week.
I'm still into Assassin's Creed 2. I'm really enjoying it. I'm not going to talk much about it, though, because apparently one of our listeners hates when we talk about video games. And I just had lunch with her today, so I better be nice.
Wait. You know what? I do want to say, though.
Too late.
I liked the people who shared some supernatural experiences, I like those. But I have to say, Blood Sparrow's story about sort of losing time and finding yourself in a place that she didn't expect.
That
kind of thing totally creeps me out. One night I woke up like in the kitchen of our house, and I didn't know how I got there. And I was totally freaked out by this. Just the notion that while I'm sleeping, I could get up, walk around, and do who knows what.
Oh, yeah.
Say who knows what, and I wouldn't, and I'd wake up maybe the next morning not even knowing I did those things. That really freaked me out. I've never done it again, but that
I only ever
sleepwalked
once, and I was a kid and I was sick. I was very ill, and like my mom had to work for some reason. Both my parents were out that night, so I had to stay with the next door neighbor, and she found me at the front door trying to unlock the front door to go home. And apparently what I told her was that I remembered what I forgot, my sweater. And I remember the conversation, and in my head what I meant to say was I forgot my toothbrush.
Oh.
Which is also not true. And so then she took me back to bed. But I remember that, like, just suddenly I'm in the hallway.
That whole phenomena just really, it's eerie to me. I mean, it's dreaming is one thing, but to actually get up, walk around and do stuff, and maybe other people can't even tell that you're still asleep. Oh, man, that just, something about that is, I just find very unnerving.
Sometimes the producer talks to me while she's asleep, and that gets hilarious. I will tell her later about the conversations that we have.
But I think Kia B said she had somewhat of a precognitive dream or something.
Yes, yes.
That was interesting, too. So I do want to, say I appreciate everyone's stories, and that was kind of fun, too.
I don't appreciate them, but that's because I don't appreciate anything.
But I interrupted something you were saying, so I wouldn't forget.
Because
I forget.
Play Assassin's Creed. Started reading the fourth Felix Castor book to the producer this week. I'm reading those to her aloud. I've already read them, but now I'm reading them to her. And this is the fourth out of five. It's called Thicker Than Water. I finally started your book, your third book.
Oh.
But I've only gotten through the incredibly long prologue.
Yeah.
And I don't say I've read longer prologues, but just compared to the other two books.
Yeah.
This one's like really long.
Yes, it is very long.
And yeah, I'm definitely intrigued, but I haven't got any further yet.
Okay. I would say something about that, but I don't want to ruin anything for you later.
It gets worse from there, is what you mean?
No, not worse. Just, well, you know, you'll probably have something to say about it later.
Oh, yes. And it'll have a lot of swear words. Not a lot of other media consumption. We gamed this week. We played Traveler this week. That got kind of cool. We may be on the verge of ending that campaign. We may be almost done playing Traveler. And then we'll play something else.
Have you tried that sort of new approach that you were going
to
use? Or?
A little bit. It's hard to do it midstream.
Oh, yeah.
But I did talk with them about it. And, oddly enough, you read it. David, our new listener, read it. All but one of my players didn't read it.
All but one didn't.
Yes. No, only one player read it. I was mildly annoyed about that. Especially because part of this new concept was it's going to take a lot more effort from my players. And I'm like, this is a bad sign if I could not get them to read the email that said they would have to do more stuff. But, yeah.
Well, I thought it sounded really interesting. Did we talked about it, right?
Well, we didn't talk about it on here because you hadn't read it yet. You read it, and by the next morning had sent me like three emails.
I know,
on the topic.
I'm sorry.
You were
about
very
that.
Excited.
I was, and I know I.
No, it was very good stuff. It's a lot of it is you'd understand better if you knew gaming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or if you were able to translate that massive essay.
So should we tell people what we're talking about?
No. The only people who might be interested have access to it because I put it up on the Happy Jacks forums. No, and everything we talked about the concept that I had been reading all this RPG theory, and now I'm coming up with a new idea of something to try. But excuse me, yawning. what else? Yeah, I haven't had a lot going on this week. We have a new company running all the cafeteria stuff at our work.
A new caterer?
Yes, a new caterer, as it were. I'm just going to leave that there.
You don't want anyone spitting in your macaroni and cheese.
Well, I don't want anything documented legally.
Why did they do that?
I don't know. I think the existing company was outbid, I think. I mean, I don't actually know.
Oh, do they have to rebid every once in a while kind of thing? Or?
I would assume.
Huh.
I mean, I don't know the details. Most of the people working for the old company are now working for the new company.
Oh.
Okay. The manager isn't, and a couple other people aren't, but that's about it. And they brought in some new people too. But I think that's pretty much it. It was not a particularly interesting week. Next weekend, not this weekend, next weekend, Nerdist Live is happening in Iowa City. And I don't think I'm going with my wife. I think I'm going with Cheryl, someone who used to listen to our podcast and does not any longer.
Oh.
And who plays in our game. Because I couldn't really find anybody else who was actually interested. My wife wasn't either, but she's going to go, you know, for me. But she's probably not going to be here that weekend.
Oh.
So, yeah, probably Cheryl, who used to listen to Nerdist and isn't anymore, but was a big enough fan that she still wants to go. So. Okay, now I'm just killing time here, I guess. Let's pull out the hat.
So, well, let me ask, though, too. Why when I tell you I'm reading some, you know, philosopher, do you hate me?
I mean, because I want you to read good books. I want you to read fiction. I want you to read stories.
But
fun stuff. Nietzsche does not count as fun stuff.
But I enjoy it. It is fun for me.
I know, and I don't want to propagate this terrible, terrible personality you've developed. I want to teach you the right way to do things.
I don't understand.
Exactly. We have to fix you.
If reading philosophy, if I find it inspiring and fun and interesting and...
That means there's something wrong with you.
And I even feel, you know, like rejuvenated even when I read it. Isn't that good?
Something wrong with that. That is a sign. That is not in and of itself evil. But it is a sign of evil deep in your soul.
Am I supposed to have that same experience when I read fiction?
Yeah, totally.
But I don't.
I know, that's why we have to fix you.
I don't think I've ever had that. I mean, even when I'm reading fiction I think is really good, I don't think I've ever had that experience with fiction.
That's why we have to fix you. People, write on the blog and tell us what fiction book William should read. And we will force him to read it, me and Ezzy. Also, if you want to write the hat with a question or a topic, write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. The hat would love to hear from you.
Azure Talon,
where the wind comes sweeping down the plain.
Dear vocal extensions of the Magical Talking Hat.
I think that's us.
That would be Tony and William. What is the best type of apple?
Ah! Well, I am going to step back here and let William handle this, because you know what? William not only has an opinion, he has a story to go along with it.
Why don't you...
And hey, here comes the producer who's been out doing chores. I never opened Frutas, but the chicken and the rice is sitting on a dryer, kind of warm. The rice-a-roni did not come out good. I don't know. Because it's that special kind of chicken flavor, the herb one or whatever, and its instructions were very different than the normal one for microwave. There was olive oil instead of butter, and you didn't brown it before you did it. And
what?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, enjoy.
Actually, I know what the producer is doing out there. Arborside. I saw it.
Oh.
With a saw.
Killing trees.
Killing trees.
She learned it by watching me. I make photocopies all day.
Have you ever eaten dandelions, William?
Yes, but... dandelion greens.
Yes.
How I'm pretty sure only half of this conversation is showing up. The producer asked William if he ate dandelions.
Dandelion greens, yes. Well, I liked them. I thought they were great. Okay. But...
You realize they have pork in them.
No. I don't know how they were prepared or anything like that. I mean, I do. They were... sautéed.
Oh.
But,
fancy. We have a friend and...
Listener.
Former listener. I think she's so far behind now, she's not really listening. But who likes to prepare them and make them into salad. And they can be pretty tasty if you get the right crop. If you get late dandelion greens, they get kind of bitter.
And with the right dressing. She had to
experiment with the right dressing
before it was good.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure...
Dandelion greens can be quite tasty.
I'm pretty sure the ones I had were marinated in...
Pork.
And a lot of that takes care of the bitter if they are bitter.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Okay, William, tell us about apples.
Well, I don't know. what do you have an opinion? First of all, do you have an opinion on what the best type of apple is? Do you have an apple that you prefer?
If I really, you know, gun to my head, I'm stuck on a desert island with only one kind of apple. Probably Jonathan's.
Really?
I like that in between sweet and tart.
Yeah, yeah.
So Jonathan's, Fuji's, Gala's. Honeycrisps are quite good, and Honeycrisps are a thing around here.
Yeah, a thing around here
but
for sure.
But they don't blow my mind like they do a lot of people. I mean, they're fine. They're good. I'll usually buy them when they're available, but...
We have a fairly large local orchard, Wilson's Orchard, that most people in this area are familiar with, and a lot of people... who are used to just going to the store and buying whatever apple is there and don't even really think about different types of apples will go out to Wilson's and they're able to sample different types of apples. And, of course, different types of apples are ready at different,
different times
of year. And so you go out there and you get to try all kinds of apples. But I think most people would agree with what you were saying just a second ago, which is, you know, apples, generally, you like them tart or sweet or somewhere between. And crisp, you know, is another word they use to describe them.
And I did learn, although it is rare because they are so mass-produced at this point, that a good Red Delicious can be really impressive. But you want to tell us about the bestest kind ever.
Well,
it's a story that you told me many years ago. And then somebody recently told somebody else, oh, wait, no, it was characters in your book telling each other this
because
story.
Because I love the story. It's a great story,
yes,
I think.
So tell the story.
Well, oh, now see, now I'm on the spot because there's certain things I don't remember because this is a true story. This actually happened.
This is a true story, according to William, who has evil in his soul.
No, it is a true story. It happened in Iowa in a town. It's spelled P-E-R-U, but... The residents of this town pronounce it Peru, not Peru.
Yes, Peru.
That's kind of an interesting thing about Iowa all the way around, but we won't talk about that now. Anyway, his name was Jesse Hyatt, and I believe this was in sometime in the 1800s. That's the part I'm not remembering is the time frame.
Probably doesn't matter too much.
Okay, well, anyway. Well, it had to have been in the 1800s because there weren't...
apples before
that. No, there weren't European and European Americans living in Iowa before then. So anyway, so Jesse has an orchard, and like many orchards of the time and many orchards today, the trees are planted in rows, and that aids in ease of cultivation and taking care of the trees. And one day, as often happens while he's walking through his orchard, there's an apple tree growing in the middle of the row, much like the little trees that were growing in your rows, in your roses out front. And like any good orchard keeper, he cut
like
this...
Like the producer just did.
Yeah, he cut the sapling down. Because it's in the middle of the row, it's going to be in the way.
And will interfere in his plans for world domination.
So Jesse cuts it down. And then the next season comes around, and the sapling has grown back. So he cuts it down again. And there's some disagreement about how many times this happened. Some people say twice, some people say three times.
38 times.
But Jesse finally felt kind of sorry for the little sapling and said, you know what, fine, just grow. Right here in the middle of the row.
His exact words, as recorded in the Annals of History, were, you know what, fuck it.
Well, I don't think he...
Exact words, I read it somewhere.
Well, anyway.
You know what? Fuck it. And then he walked back to his house.
So he let the sapling grow, and here's this, and it grows into this tree.
Whoa.
That's an apple tree.
Whoa!
But not one that he recognizes. He's not sure what kind of apples are going to come on this tree.
Alien spores.
But the tree just sits there in the middle of everything for like 10 years without even making any fruit.
Because the tree's a bitch.
But 10 years later, there some fruit appears, and he tries it. He thinks it's the best apple he's ever eaten. So he decides the rest of the world has to know about this apple. So he starts entering it in contests and everything, but it never wins for some reason. By the way, he calls this apple the Hawkeye.
I was waiting for that.
And it never wins any competitions. And for 15 years or so, he keeps trying to get this apple noticed. Finally,
Wait. 3 seasons can't make the sapling go away. No. 10 years, the fucker doesn't bear any fruit.
No, no fruit at all.
15 years, can't get anybody to give a damn about this apple.
That's right.
How does the story not end with, and he went into the shed with his shotgun?
I don't. And it well, was all he had over. Other varieties he was selling. I mean, he was, you know, he was making like, he was making a brisk trade
like
in apples.
Beautiful mind kind of thing. Like, he's got all these pictures of the apple. And...
But he, you know, he thinks the Hawkeye is really a great apple, and it's going to have its day. So eventually, there is a grower that takes notice and buys the propagation rights, and it starts winning some awards, and the name is changed to the Red Delicious, and eventually it becomes the single most popular variety of apple in the whole wide world. Not only that, but most people, if you ask them to sit down and draw an apple, they're going to draw a distinctive shape that really looks most like the Red Delicious apple. It's like the archetypical apple, this Red Delicious. But what I think is great about this story is you have this sapling that, you know, sort of refused to grow in line with everyone else, refused to be cut down, refused to be discouraged after 10 years of not bearing fruit, and even after bearing fruit, 15 years of discouragement, but it kept going and eventually became the single most popular apple in the world. So to me, it's like a parable in persistence.
So you think that the apple tree might have gotten discouraged when it didn't win awards at fairs?
No, I'm saying that people can be like this tree.
Meanwhile, Jesse Hyatt died penniless and insane.
I think it's a great story about
to an apple.
About, you know, you stand out and you persevere and you don't let yourself get discouraged, and, you know, maybe if you don't quit, you'll become the most popular apple in the world.
I've been doing that for at least that many years, and I ain't no popular apple.
Like this podcast, you know, it's quirky. It's kind of outside.
We have to do this for 15 years.
I don't know how long we have to do it. I'm just saying.
Oh, I can't go that long without punching you.
The lesson really is this: the people who make it, in quotes, the people who everyone remembers, they weren't necessarily, and often they absolutely weren't, any smarter or more talented than anyone else. They just didn't give up, you know, when everybody else did. And to me, that's the lesson of the Red Delicious apple.
When somebody kills you, come back next season. Okay, no, so the best apple in the world, is the best variety of apple, is Red Delicious, but it's not Red Delicious. It is in fact called the Hawkeye. Apple. Mm-hmm. Tell your friends, tell your children, spread the word.
I will agree that a good Red Delicious is an incredible apple.
I ate Red Delicious since I was born, well, you know, and it was like 20 years before I had one that I was like, holy crap, that's the whole point of
Well,
those.
There are some varieties where the skins are a little tough, they're not particularly sweet.
And they're grown in Argentina and shipped and whatever. And Red Delicious, in general, when I'm in a grocery store, if I see Red Delicious apples, I avoid them like the plague.
Well,
because more often than not, they are mealy and bland.
Yeah, mealy. Yeah, that's exactly right. But if you get one that's like, I don't know if you call it an heirloom or whatever, you can tell why it was so popular when
it
first came out.
A good Red Delicious is, and it really is, it's like the epitome of apple flavor.
Yeah.
Even the taste is like the platonic apple.
I don't know what's happened, if it's some hybridization or
something.
Well,
it became
kind of
so popular, it's been mass grown.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you have something you wanted to add, my love?
And I read something a couple years ago about how they
You're
know
gonna have to
it's
get into
not
your clues,
good.
I don't know if that's here.
They can't when you're talking. That's the thing. They can't fix it now because it's so ubiquitous and it's sold so cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
In order to like fix the line, they would have to do things that would raise the price, and the market won't bear it because it's kind of a crappy apple for most people at this point.
Well, that's
so
too
people
bad.
Won't pay more, so they can't improve it.
There are some places you can buy. That makes perfectly good
sense. I won't
sense,
reiterate
actually.
That. I will just assume everyone heard
no,
it.
No, I'm sure they heard
so
it.
So confident.
I'm sure they heard it.
I'm looking at the little thingies. I'm not.
You said that last time, and they could hear me fine.
From
yeah,
clear
but
over
you
there.
You didn't talk nearly as long that time.
People, if you can find orchards that have what they'll say is, you know, a tree that comes from the original Jesse Hyatt's tree.
Made from Jesse Hyatt's rib.
But yeah, if you've had Red Delicious apples and you thought they were terrible, well, then you probably didn't have the right apple.
You need a Hawkeye apple.
That's what I like to say, but you can't find a Hawkeye. They don't call it that anymore. It's just called Red Delicious.
Sold the apple strain to Mr. Jonathan Appleseed Montgomery, went on to reap untold riches.
No, I know they sold it to the
Hasbro.
No, they're in Missouri. Something Brothers. I can't remember. I mean, we get a seed catalog from them all the time, and I can't remember their name. It starts
and you're
with an
like,
S.
Screw you! No, you stole the Hawkeye.
No, they didn't steal it; they bought it. It starts with an S, Brothers something. I can't remember.
So. Salmon Brothers.
No. I can't remember.
Sasquatch Brothers.
But I.
Do you ever watch that show, Finding Bigfoot?
No.
Guess what? They don't ever find him.
Anyway, best type of apple. That's one of my favorite stories about, not just about apples, but it originates in Iowa.
I knew it would. Williams' books take place primarily in Iowa and are a constant, like, AAA guide to Iowa. It's kind of ridiculous. Like, everything is all these different places in Iowa. And it always happens to come up why that place is interesting or what part that played in history. So not only are there these elaborate sci-fi fantasy books, they are in fact also a triptych for Iowa. So come for the fiction, stay for the apples and steak and baseball.
Well, and tenderloins, that's...
I haven't got to that part.
Yeah, the tenderloin. Well... Huh, what? No, I don't have any tenderloins in the book.
Well, then what the hell, man?
Because people come to Iowa for tenderloins, not so much steak. Steak, yeah, a little bit.
I don't think people come to Iowa for tenderloins.
I think they should.
They should. What I'm saying is I think most people outside Iowa don't know what the hell that is.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry.
So they come here and they say, try our lovely sandwich. It's called the tenderloin. And we say, okay. We eat it and we're like, holy shit. I'm staying here. Give me an apple.
Yeah, there are steaks in one of my books, isn't there?
Yes, there are. And it's pissed me off because I've never gotten to that steakhouse. I don't want to go now.
You should go.
I want to go for the atmosphere. Forget the steak. It's just great. Like the look when you describe the place in there. I'm like, I want to go to there. but I also want the steak. But
yeah, a lot of cool places to visit in Iowa that are in the book.
I totally think you made up that thing, though, about doing a night's waiting tables and then you get the steak dinner. I don't think that would work. I think they would be like, get the hell out of here.
Well, I don't know, you know.
With your meth dealing self.
When you work, I've worked at a lot of food service jobs, and I can tell you that sometimes when they're really shorthanded and, you know, someone comes along who looks like they're not using meth, actually. You think, well, maybe they'd be okay. You just say, all right, fine, wash your hands and wait tables.
And you don't pay them? You just give them
have to pay them. Well, no, you don't. Okay, by law, you have to pay them. But if they're not on the books, if they don't fill out a W-2 or whatever, you know, you can pay them however you want.
This is what I'm saying. I don't think that happens these days. Of course, technically, those books are set a little ways in the future, so maybe it picks up again with your future hobos.
Yeah.
Hobos of the future.
People don't believe in them, but
I
I'm telling you.
And how did I become Hobo King? And so what makes you think, based on that? I did like that. I had forgotten that part. And I'm like, yeah, why did he bring him to the Hobo King? He's called the King, but come on.
Because he's not very smart.
Yes. Oh, poor Big D. Sorry, we're getting inside baseball here. Let's draw another question. Thank you, Azure Talon, for your giving William an opportunity to minister to us all on the gospel according to Jesse Hyatt. Maybe that should be the title of the episode. All right.
I think he was a Quaker or something, which is why I don't suppose he would say what you said he said.
Fuck it. Just grow there, goddammit. See if I fucking care.
I think he was a Quaker. I'm not remembering this.
He probably stayed silent.
You know, it's online. People can look it up and they can correct all of my.
You ever been to a Quaker?
Poor recollections.
Meeting?
No, I haven't been to one, but I know how they kind of go.
Yeah, boring.
Well, unless someone has something interesting to say.
I would get kicked out so fast.
Yes, you probably would.
All right, so I have a question in my hand. Let us move on.
Okay.
This is from Kia B.
The precog.
Yeah.
She probably already knew we were going to draw
this
question.
All right. Dear the magical talking hat, she's very consistent in her openers, and they're always very polite and formal. I like that.
Yeah.
Will mobile phones eventually make landlines obsolete?
Well, that seems to be the trend, doesn't it?
I was going to say, a lot of people have gone that way. My brother's family has gone that way. I believe his youngest, who I believe is 8, owns a cell phone. I don't, and I'm 35, but my 8-year-old nephew does. I hope not too soon, but I mean, it makes sense, because theoretically, at a certain point, we get to where, well, I mean, smartphones already have it. We're merging all our technology. Our computer and everything is all just in one device with the phone and everything else.
Yeah, I am.
So it makes sense. And you know, and your computers are going from being a desktop to a laptop to a tablet and things like this. It makes sense that eventually it's just going to be one giant, and I say giant, but very small, PDA device or whatever that is going to handle everything.
Well, is there a situation or a condition wherein, you know, a landline is going to be something that is more desirable? For example, let's say there's some incredible solar flare activity or something. Is that something that would knock out wireless communications, but the wired communications would still work fine? I don't know. I'm asking.
I suppose. I mean, you could be in a situation where you have poor reception. If you got a landline, it still works.
Yeah.
In general, I don't think the main issue has to do with power. If for some reason you have no power and your battery is dead on your cell phone, if you have the right kind of phone, your landline will still work.
Yeah.
And in fact, I saw a thing one time how you can actually tap into the power in your phone line and light a light with it.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, because it's a very low level of electricity running through it that has nothing to do with the electric company. So,
well, that, I mean, maybe as a sort of a contingency, you know, since the infrastructure, well, I suppose that's the whole point, isn't it? If people discontinue their landlines or whatever, that there might come a time where nobody sees it as cost effective to maintain the wired infrastructure.
Yes. And once we hit, it's going to be price point of cell phones. And I think we're getting close. If I had a cell phone that could do only what my current phone does, and I get my phone through the cable company, I could probably get it for $35 or $40 a month. I currently pay $26 a month for my phone. So we're getting pretty close.
Okay, but will the government or the military or will I don't know, the corporate community, are they going to have some reason to invest in the wired infrastructure as some kind of a, you know, backup? Or, you know, I mean, will wireless communication remain somewhat unreliable so that the powers that be will have a reason to maintain the infrastructure so that they always have a backup for when the wireless telecommunication isn't working, that kind of thing?
Potentially. I mean, theoretically, we've already got some of that with, I mean, some technologies don't get entirely replaced. We may hit a point where basically everyone uses a cell phone and doesn't have a landline anymore. Sort of like we're at the point where basically everybody has a television, but they still listen to the radio.
Right.
And they still read books.
And also, a couple of them. When we say everyone, the fact of the matter is the habits of individual people have less and less to do with what technologies are going to be invested in and whatnot. I mean, commercial and government interests usually are the ones determining by and large. I mean, you have whole, remember when UPS started focusing more on their commercial customers and less on their residential or private customers? It's government and business interests seem to be determining trends and things more than, say, the masses would.
Yeah.
Everyone can be using cell phones, but if the government or the corporate interests decide that they need the infrastructure of wired communication, then it will get taken care of and it'll get funded and they'll use it, even if the vast majority of people do not.
And I just don't know if there is enough call. I mean, at this point, you're right. It's not wireless communication is still unreliable compared to wired.
Yeah.
Significantly so. So it's not gone yet, but I don't know if that's the only determining factor.
What about security? Which is one form more secure than the other?
Well, in theory, wired communication is more so.
I mean, except that you can go to some kind of exchange and tap into it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's not, I wouldn't say it's more secure, but it's wired communication has a finite number of points of contact.
I see.
Whereas wireless is just in the ether.
Yeah, you could just be anywhere
and theoretically
right
fuck with it.
Yeah, gotcha.
But I think we're getting to a technical level that's way beyond either of us. So.
Well, I'm just saying if I'm just trying to see if there would be reasons why governments or businesses or whoever, people who are actually determining these things even more than the masses are, would have some reason to maintain that infrastructure.
I'm sure. I mean, they'll never go away completely. Because there will always be places that want a communications network that is wholly isolated.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is whether or not, for all practical purposes, in the same way that you can say everybody in this country has a TV, it's not technically true.
No.
But it basically...
right.
As a cultural image, yes, this country, everyone has a TV. So are we going to hit a point where as a country or as the world... Everybody has a cellular phone and nobody has a landline.
Because
I don't think it's going to be in government or corporate interests to keep the phone lines running to my house.
Well, but maybe we need to look at this question a different way. When I use Skype or some kind of phone-like application on my computer... it's not running through a phone line. It's running through my cable modem.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and technically the phone I have right now is internet phone.
So
we get ours through our cable company. So we already aren't using our phone line.
So maybe a question or another way to ask the question is, will that kind of wired phone usage, like through a cable or something like that, displace conventional phone lines?
Which, again, I think it is. But with the possible exception of reliability issue, again, if the producer and I had a choice between you're going to pay the exact same amount and you can have the thing we have right now, or you can have a cell phone that you can use equally unlimitedly, I think we'd take the cell phone.
Well, do you think the internet phones or using telephone technology through your cable modem or through a data... a cable instead of a phone line, you think that's less reliable or less?
Well, it is, because if the cable goes out, we got no phone. If the power goes out, even if we have an old-fashioned phone, out of luck.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
Theoretically, the fail-safe for that is supposed to be that they assume we own a cell phone.
Well, I would think that, given the things that you've just said, that the government would think, yeah, we need to keep regular phone lines in place in case, the grid is attacked or we can keep communications going and we want it to be more secure than, say, wireless communication.
I don't think I have enough faith in the government's concern for the individual houses. I'm sure they've got fail-safes in place for their shit.
Well, that's what I mean. Wouldn't those fail-safes be wired? I mean...
Yes, but they'd be in their little bunkers.
Okay, I gotcha.
They don't care about the wireless going to my house.
I hear you.
The government has sent me letters specifically saying, "Dear Tony, we don't care if you live or die. Sincerely, the government."
The question is, will mobile phones eventually make landlines obsolete? And you're saying that...
I think probably.
But radios aren't obsolete. And you were just making a comparison.
No, and I would say that's how you can't tell. Oh. There are certain types of technology where that shit kind of happens. And there's other... No, I don't think Kindles are going to make books obsolete either.
No. I don't think so.
However, either. Trish sent me a link today of a new thing that LG is mass producing. It's the, you know, the electronic ink like the Kindles have, displays.
Yeah.
Flexible. It's plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's flexible. You can bend it. Mm. And it's way thinner and way lighter. Because it doesn't need to be protected from, like, dropping it or whatever. Because it's just made out of plastic. It's freaking awesome. It's like a bendy piece of plastic. And they are mass... This isn't a concept piece. They are mass producing these now.
I can't read anything on, like, on a computer screen or Kindle or anything like that.
You never learned how to read.
No, I can't read it like that.
See this?
Okay, I see a scratch on your arm.
I just got that from Ezzy.
Just now?
Yes.
Well, you probably deserved it.
Ah!
Well,
I was petting her.
Maybe from something you did earlier.
No, mostly she's just trying to climb up and her claws are...
Do you like reading books, like, on a computer? Or no, you don't, because you printed my whole book out.
I don't, in general. I haven't messed with the Kindle. The Kindle looks very different than reading it on a screen.
Yeah, I guess.
That's why I think Kindle Fire is so fucking stupid.
Why?
Because I'm like, you're just reading it on a screen again. Oh. It's backlit. You aren't saving the power that you do with electronic ink. I totally get the point of... I shouldn't say the Kindle Fire is fucking stupid. The Kindle Fire is fucking stupid if you want a Kindle. If you want an iPad and can't afford it, then the Kindle Fire is fine. But don't be getting Kindle Fire saying, this is for my book reading. Because that's bull. Like, no. That's a terrible idea.
Well, I'm never going to have anything like that anyway.
Because we won't allow you.
You know, you're going to hate me even more when I tell you how I'm reading Beyond Good and Evil. I don't just have a copy of Beyond Good and Evil. I'm reading it as part of a collection of books that came with an Encyclopedia Britannica that I have that's, you know, I don't know, probably 15, 20 years old. That I still have the whole thing. And
you realize very little in that is true anymore.
The Encyclopedia Britannica, you've got the Micro Britannica, the Macro Britannica, and then you have what's called the Great Books. And in this volume, you have Beyond Good and Evil, and two other philosophers are in there, too. And that's how I'm reading it.
Nice.
Old school. And the funny thing is that probably 15 or 20 years ago, when I was at the Iowa State Fair, Britannica stopped me and wanted to sell me, you know, all these volumes and stuff. And I said, well, I guess it couldn't have been. How long ago would it have been? Because even at that time, I was asking, well, what about, you know, CD-ROMs and stuff like that? I mean, why would I buy all of these volumes when I can have the whole thing on two or three discs? And they go, oh, that's never going to catch on, they said.
And clearly it worked because you bought it.
Well, no, I didn't buy this. This belongs to somebody else, and now it's kind of
They got the crap on flash memory, and they're like, I don't need this bullshit. And you're like, I'm old and confused. Give them to me.
Well, the encyclopedias themselves are... I've never had much use for encyclopedias. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Horribly out of date.
Yeah.
They spell Congress with an F.
Well, and you know, what I mean is...
Adolf Hitler as a somewhat stable veteran of the Great War.
If you
they have a postal address for Machu Picchu.
If you purchase all the volumes, it's just, you know, it's kind of like you're saying. The very next year, you feel like you have to buy the whole thing all over again because there's going to be important, interesting things in there. But the Great Books, which it's several volumes, is very nice.
But as time goes on, they become less great.
No, no, no.
As things like
Twilight
series and 50 Shades of Grey.
No, they're like cars that are over 25 and 30 years old. They just get
broken.
They just get better.
Gas hog. Well,
broken.
Don't mean you are telling me that your old encyclopedia set does not meet emission standards.
No.
Is what you're
no,
saying.
It was made before all that stuff really kicked in.
Been grandfathered in. Yeah. Just barely hobbles along. It's so old that the license plate on it says Visit Iowa, Pacific Wonderland.
That would be pretty old.
No, I went in high school, a friend of mine bought an old Ford Fairlane, and it was so old, the license plate on it said, Oregon, Pacific Wonderland, which is not a thing any license plate from Oregon ever said after, like, I don't even know, before we were born.
Well, old Iowa license plates have numbers on them that represent the counties.
Oh.
So...
But then eventually they developed letters to represent the counties.
So if you saw like 63 in a license plate, you know, you might not know what that means, but a police officer supposedly is going to know that, oh, that's Marion County or whatever. I think Marion County was 63.
Why would you know that?
Because I'm from Marion County and all the old cars that my dad has in his yard have license plates that say 63 on it.
Why do people like you? As you don't mess with the mic.
We have a lot of old cars on my farm. Lots of old cars.
Either you're planting them too shallow or too deep, but they just ain't growing. See? Good joke. It's a good joke. Damn it.
I think it's 63. I hate when I don't remember things right, as I often don't, and I have to correct
and
myself
then
in the blog.
Gives up.
I hate that when that happens.
And then prints a retraction. Okay, draw another one. I'm busy petting Ezzy.
She's going to scratch you.
No, she's all happy.
Oh, well, she wasn't happy when she scratched you?
I don't. She was moving around.
Happy.
She's not moving around now.
Happy after she scratched you.
See, look, she's all laying down. And,
David.
David! New listener.
Says.
I went, oh, that was something that happened this week.
What happened?
The producer and I went out with David and his lovely wife to dinner, and then we went and played games at a coffee house.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. Did you watch the Will Wheaton game?
Not yet, but I'm going to.
I watched it.
Did you? How was it?
I liked it.
It seems like there's not much to it. It's just
no.
Him and Grant Uehara and Felicia Day playing Small World, but
I didn't
it sounds
think,
fun.
I didn't think I'd like it. But I just kind of wanted to see, you know, well,
yeah.
Is this going to be fun or whatever? And I watched, you know, I'm watching a couple minutes. And, okay, this is probably enough. I've watched enough. But I keep watching. And then a few minutes later, I'm like, okay, that's probably enough of that. I could probably just, but I just keep watching. And I watched the whole thing. And I realized that was actually quite entertaining.
Yeah, I think it would be.
And I can even see how it could continue, you know, to be
different
so.
Different game, different people.
Different game and different people. That's exactly right. So, and I think you'll like
it. It's like dinner for five.
I think you'll like it. And I liked. I watched Felicia Day's video blog, too, and I thought it was good.
Oh, God. Ezzy. Oh.
What?
She farted.
Okay. Well, maybe that's why she's
Ezzy's
so happy.
Ezzy's ass is really a terrible, terrible weapon.
That's why she's so happy.
Oh, God.
I'll scratch you. I'll...
Fart in your face.
Flatulate on you. Okay.
But no, so yeah. So David and his lovely wife, Robin, and Trish and I... Went out to Exotic India and had a great meal there.
Hmm.
And then we went and we played Forbidden Island twice.
Oh.
The reason we were able to play it twice, even though it can take a while, is the first game we lost on the first turn.
You lost on the first turn?
We lost on the
How
first turn.
How does that even happen?
Because
I don't know anything about this game, so I can...
You are attempting to get these treasures from the temples of this Forbidden Island, and you have to do it before... The island sinks, because the island is sinking.
Mm.
And the way the game works, you have to try and shore... As things start sinking, you shore them up, because if they sink too far, they're gone. And the place where your helicopter is, if it sinks completely away, you're out of luck, because you have no way to get off the island.
Mm.
And as the setup, we drew the card that showed that it was underwater... And then on the first turn, we got a card that made the water rise, and you had to draw again, and it disappeared. in the first turn.
So you lost basically in the first turn.
We lost.
Okay,
in the first turn.
Okay. I guess I was thinking that someone won on the first turn.
No, it's a cooperative game. Everybody wins or everybody loses.
Oh, I see.
It's very similar to the game Pandemic, but in fact the mechanic is very similar. But instead of fighting off worldwide diseases, you're trying to get these treasures from this island.
Ah, I see. And apparently, you can lose in the first turn.
Yep.
Dave Avid wants to know...
Dave Avid.
Crunchy or creamy peanut butter? Mmm, man.
Oh.
See, that's hard because I grew up on creamy peanut butter, and sometimes I'd have crunchy, and I thought that was an interesting idea, but I didn't. It wasn't my favorite. Now I won't eat any other peanut butter except the kind where you go to these, you know, for us it's a cooperative, but other
Benedictine monks who grind it with rocks.
Other people might go to a health food store or whatever, and there's this machine that's filled with peanuts, and it just grinds them into a container. So all it is ground peanuts. No sugar, no salt, no anything.
Yeah.
And that's not really crunchy peanut butter, but it is, you know, there are little bits of peanut in there.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly creamy either. And that's the only peanut butter I'll eat now, so I
there was a regional brand growing up where I did called Adams Peanut Butter that was peanuts roasted, lightly salted, smooshed.
And that's it.
That was their whole recipe. And consequently, especially if you didn't keep it in the fridge, you had to stir it up.
Oh, yeah, stir it up, sure. The oils will...
And they always had this great commercial talking about showing the beginning of time. It was this rough animation style, and it would have this peanut, and the caveman came out and he put the peanut on the rock, and they were like, you take a peanut, roast it, salt it lightly, and smash it, and then an elephant falls off a cliff nearby and crushes it.
Mm.
And they're like, here at Adams, we do the same thing. And so what you had was a picture of a factory and an assembly line with peanuts going in, and you'd just hear the elephant trumpet, and bam! Elephant trumpet, bam! And then out the other side were coming jars of Adams peanut butter.
Nice.
For a little while, we had that. I was raised on crunchy.
Okay.
I was raised on crunchy my whole life. Now I'm into creamy. We keep both in the house.
Oh.
The producer has her crunchy,
mm-hmm.
and I have my creamy. I can't speak for the producer because when I do, I get slapped. But for me, if I have to eat crunchy, it's not a problem or anything. I just like the smoothness of the creamy peanut butter.
Hmm.
I don't like any business going on in there. It's simple, straightforward stuff. So how I roll.
We specifically had Skippy peanut butter only. Skippy. That's what we had. We didn't have Jif or any of those other creamy crunchy, whatever.
But choosy moms.
I know, but we always had
Skippy. We didn't
Skippy
have any of that crap. We always had the house brand. We had Safeway or Country Fair or
that's
Albertsons.
It's interesting you should say that because as I was growing up, I don't remember having very many generic or, you know, like you say, house brands. Now, sometimes when I went to my grandparents' house, we'd have like Hy-Vee. Hy-Vee is a employee-owned regional grocery store.
It's a grocery store around here, yeah.
And we would have Hy-Vee sodas. But my folks hardly ever... I didn't even know what generic meant for a long time.
So they were all about the brands.
I don't know. I think my dad was just really particular. You know, I think I've probably mentioned that my family, they're very particular eaters.
Yeah.
And I think my dad just liked what he liked, you know. And generic just didn't taste the same.
Which it often doesn't.
So, you know, we had Oscar Mayer bologna. We had Skippy peanut butter.
Did you actually call it bologna?
No, we called it bologna.
Good.
But it's not spelled like that.
That is true.
Yeah, we had brand name everything. And I didn't even know the concept of, well, some
you
people will make the
fancy.
Same thing and put a, you know, put another. And when I was growing up, generic... like today, just about every generic brand you find is got a store's label on it.
Yeah,
like
it's not a generic brand; it's a house brand.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know if you can find true generic.
I don't
generic.
Know. I haven't seen. I was an older kid when I finally saw generic. That's just the white.
Yeah, like a black and white
black
label.
Yeah,
that
just says like cheese.
Yeah. And, you know, right.
Bread.
And you didn't know who made it.
That's the thing. I'm like, where does this... I remember thinking, like, where does this come from?
And I still don't know. I mean, since then I've thought that... Since then I've thought that maybe it's like, okay, so Skippy has some inspectors find, you know, some of their peanut butter is...
The ones with the dead mouse in it and stuff.
Well, yeah. Maybe not quite that bad, but not quite up to their standards, and so they can... But they can still make money off of it by selling it to some... A generic company.
But you still would call it something. Like, where is the generic company?
I don't know.
It's not a brand. Like, generic isn't a brand. It's a descriptive term.
Well, except that it became kind of a brand. I mean, you could recognize it.
Yes, but
they all looked. All of the packaging looked the same.
Generic ink. Like, generic LLC.
I don't know. All I know is when you went to the store, you would see very distinctive packaging for generic... stuff.
It was just white with black writing on it.
And that was supposed to mean it wasn't any particular brand.
All in the exact same font.
But it became a brand by itself, and I don't know where it came from.
Every time they have to cover up a brand with their own thing on Mythbusters, I think it looks like that. Because it just is white with Mythbusters logo in black on it.
But I've never seen, you know, truly generic anymore.
So no.
You, like you say, house brand. Which,
and sometimes it's the brand of the grocery store, and sometimes it's some other name that is still technically a brand of the grocery store.
Aldi is famous for that. We've talked about Aldi before.
Well, Aldi comes up with knockoff ones.
Yeah.
It's
with similar names, yes, and looks, but it's a different thing.
It's Ragu pasta sauce spelled with two O's. Yes.
Yeah, generic.
Kraft mac and cheese spelled with a C, actual Kraft.
So you remember generic stuff. I thought...
I do. We never bought it. I remember seeing it in Fred Meyer.
Sometimes I think that I just... Because sometimes I'll walk up to somebody and I'll say, hey, wow, that was... last time I saw you, we were at this such and such party, and
they slap you and say, get away from me, I don't know you.
No, they know me, but I never went. I've never been there in my life, and I realize I dreamed it. That happens to me a lot. So I thought maybe I was dreaming.
Sometimes you think I already told you about Simpsons episodes.
That was a different thing altogether.
I've never seen before.
That was different. I didn't dream that. I just forgot. But I thought generic. I didn't know if I was remembering that right.
I saw it. Not a lot. I saw it a couple times. I saw it specifically at Fred Meyer's. Which we didn't go grocery shopping at Fred Meyer very often, but I saw it there.
That's regional too, isn't it?
It is. It's somebody bought it.
Oh,
I think Kroger may have bought it, but yeah, Fred Meyer Super Shopping Center. It was Walmart before there was Walmart. It was the big store that had everything and a grocery store.
Did they in some places they just go by Meyer's, or it was always Fred Meyer's? Because I think
Fred Meyer.
Oh, Meyer. Oh, okay.
Myers was a different thing
entirely. Okay.
And there was, Fred Meyer Super Shopping Center. that's how one of my cousins used to say it, because that was their tagline, technically.
You know, that also makes me think
that's
of...
That's how the producer always says, Hy-Vee Shop Hy-Vee, because their little song always said, Hy-Vee Shop Hy-Vee. So she always calls it Hy-Vee Shop Hy-Vee.
Now, where you grew up, did they have... Could you sometimes, when you went shopping, did you get these little stamps that you put in a book and you could redeem for...
One place, we had a chain called Fry's Grocery Store. Kind of like Fry's Electronics, but it was groceries. And they had green stamps.
Yeah, green stamps, that's right.
Yes, they had those. But I don't know how it worked. I don't think we shopped where the best deal was, but we definitely had phases in my youth. I remember the time period when we mostly went to Fry's. I remember the time period where we mostly went to Safeway. I remember the time period where we mostly went to Albertsons. Like, I think at certain points, my mother just decided, you know what, these people are cheating us. These people are much cheaper, and so we'd switch. I don't know why, but...
Well, yeah, I noticed that, too, when I was...
Because some people will go, you know, we buy our soda from here, we buy our bread from here,
right,
and I'm
right.
Fuck that. In the words of Jesse Hyatt...
No, Jesse Hyatt...
Fuck it!
Don't do that. Jesse Hyatt was... Don't do that to his memory. But look... My mom used to go to Hy-Vee, and then she'd go to Safeway, and then she'd go to this place and that place. And I always wondered, why doesn't she just go to the same place every time? And it was probably just because someone had a sale or something.
Yeah.
Some circular was out. Oh, well, we'll go here. And it was probably mostly because the Dr. Pepper was on sale. Because my dad drank Dr. Pepper, and we kids weren't allowed to drink Dr. Pepper, but dad drank it.
Stunt your growth.
That's right. And I've told you this story, but I haven't said it, told this story.
I thought you did do this story on the podcast.
Okay, well.
Well, we're way over time. So, people, if William has not, in fact, told the story of the Dr. Pepper and its associations with his father on the podcast, let us know, and we'll make him tell it next week. All right? All right.
All right.
So,
all right.
Do your thank yous.
Thank you, Dave, Kia, and Azure Talon.
And remember, God loves you, and I love you, and that's the way it should be.
Okay.
That was a show. There was some ministry show on Sunday mornings or whatever, that's how they would end. And they even had a little song that said, God loves you and I love you and that's the way it should be. And this was before Barney, which also, you know, is similar.
That's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be.
But
don't question it, was the second verse.
Huh. God loves you. Wait, God
and,
loves,
I, love
and
you.
I love you.
And that's the way it should be.
And that's the way it should be.
Yes.
Well, I thought they just said that's the way it is. So.
Yes, but it's also the way it should be. Well, it is right, is what we're saying.
In other words,
question it.
In other words, take note, God, because you better not. You better keep loving us.
Change this shit around.
Yeah, God.
Anything that prevents God from loving you, or I from loving you.
Oh, but you don't think it's directed at God, like, hey, God. You know,
I don't know if God was watching.
Well, I mean, then by definition, isn't he always watching, or she?
I never asked him.
Or her.
Or her. Yes, her is watching.
If you say, God loves you and I love you and that's the way it should be, isn't that also directed at God to say, now look, God,
yes.
Don't ever change that.
Don't go creeping, God.
Wow, that's pretty bold.
Get
be telling
your shit
God
together.
Be telling God what to do.
And you know what? Those people are dead now.
Well, I suppose that.
I don't actually know that, but they were pretty old, and it was 20 years ago.
Stands to reason, I suppose.
All right, we're way the fuck over time now, so.
Okay.
Good night, and we will see you
next week for episode 57.
God loves you, and I love you.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.